from deep inside your radio.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, it's Le Show. Well, we may be preempted. Your local station may have forgotten to start the tape machine, or you may have forgotten to set your clock ahead. But nonetheless, it's Le Show. More apologies of the week, the fog watch, a candidate for the quote of the war, and news from the rear. Excuse me? That's what I said. You've heard enough news from the front. But you'll hear more. And 41 calls 43, because that's what they do. And that's what we do. This is Le Show from the edge of America. Stay tuned. First thing we do, though, is I read the trades for you. I know it's been bumped up to first position, and only the public radio gremlins can really explain why. From Advertising Age, ladies and gentlemen, you've waited for this. White House to end drugs and terror ads. I'll read it for you. What am I going to do? Bring you the news? Well, yeah. The White House Anti-Drug Office will end its controversial drugs and terror advertising campaign. And it will also cease a polarizing $8 million annual study that found that ads aimed at youth were not working. And that pitted the drug office against the Partnership for a Drug-Free America. Talk about a drug war. The drugs and terror ads, called Nick and Norm, for the two figures portrayed in them, will end in May. The campaign first broke 5 months after 9/11 with two Super Bowl ads that cost the drug office more than $3 million to run. The spot centered on the idea that people who purchase drugs help fund terrorism. Later ads replaced terrorism with terror, suggesting drug buys supported drug cartel attacks on innocent civilians. The terrorism ads were produced outside the Partnership for a Drug-Free America, hence the controversy. The partnership said the ads were off strategy and refused to do any of the spots. Partnership Chairman Alan Rosenshine ripped the campaign in a congressional hearing. What's he been smoking? The battle coming to a drug office already wounded by complaints over an ad agency's initial stewardship of the account bolstered congressional critics who tried to cut spending dramatically. They eventually reduced it by about $25 million to about $150 million a year. Legislation to continue the program is expected soon to be proposed by a bipartisan group of senators. They said last week the new law would likely include language limiting the drug office's ability to go outside the partnership. Ooh, the partnership flexes its muscles, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brain on partnership. So, one more month to see Nick and Norm chewing the fat over drugs and terrorism, ladies and gentlemen. Spend your time wisely, won't you? Stay tuned. This is Le Show, and as is my wont, I'm Harry Shearer. Thank you for asking. I'm reading the trades for you. From TV Week, is your television watching you? You know the answer already, don't you? Could the federal government find out what you're watching on TV, even if you're not the subject of a criminal investigation, if you're a satellite or TiVo owner? The answer is yes. Under the USA Patriot Act, federal government can force a non-cable TV operator to disclose every show you have watched. The government just has to say the request is related to a terrorism investigation. That's easy to say. I just said it. Plus, your TV provider is prohibited from informing you that the feds have requested the information. Your radio's not listening to you, though. That's the good news. Ladies and gentlemen, there's always good news when I read the trades for you. So, we have a very different strategic situation, don't we, than we had a week ago. A week ago, everybody in the media was kind of carping about the war plan. And today, of course, what a plan. What an amazing plan. They're all saying. Well, all right. So, news from the rear. Let's look at what you haven't heard as of yet. From Australia, they may be the ones facing danger on the battlefield, but U.S. soldiers in Iraq are being asked to pray for President George W. Bush. Thousands of Marines have been given a pamphlet called, quote, A Christian's Duty, unquote, a mini prayer book which includes a tear-out section to be mailed to the White House, pledging the soldier who sends it in has been praying for Bush. It's not what I mean. President Bush. Quote, I have committed to pray for you, your family, your staff, and our troops during this time of uncertainty and tumult. May God's peace be your guide, says the pledge, according to a journalist embedded with coalition forces. The pamphlet, produced by a group called In Touch Ministries, offers a daily prayer to be made for the U.S. president, a born-again Christian who likes to invoke his God in speeches. Last Sunday's was, pray that the president and his advisors will seek God and his wisdom daily and not rely on their own understanding. Monday's read, pray that the president and his advisors will be strong and courageous to do what is right, regardless of critics. British Dateline Basra, this is from Agence France-Presse, cheese-eating news service. British soldiers have been scavenging the debris of war for Iraqi army boots because the British army variety are disintegrating in the hot desert sun. Guardsman Lee Williams of the Desert Rats Royal Scots Dragoon Guards, spend less money on the name and more on the boots, guys, found a new pair of boots in an abandoned barracks, which he said were lighter and more comfortable than the British footwear. He added he'd been forced to swap his footwear for the Iraqi style because no replacements were available for his own disintegrating boots. Defense Department officials admit to some regrets over the embedding program. When the program was hatched, defense leaders thought the technological challenges of broadcasting from a battle zone would naturally limit coverage. That's a concession by a defense official. Maybe Tori Clark. Maybe the lady in pink and purple. They envisioned television reporters finding time and a strong enough satellite signal to broadcast live only once or twice a day. Instead, television reporters are beaming grainy footage of battles and interviews on the fly over video phones from the back of a speeding Humvee. Quote, we just thought the natural challenges of broadcasting from the field would restrict it, said the official. Had we known it would be this wide open, we might have considered restrictions. Unquote. Never too late for second thoughts. Oh, this from a book, A World Transformed by George Herbert Walker Bush, published 1999, quote, We should not march into Baghdad. To occupy Iraq would instantly shatter our coalition, turning the whole Arab world against us and make a broken tyrant into a latter-day Arab hero, assigning young soldiers to a fruitless hunt for a securely entrenched dictator and condemning them to fight in what would be an unwinnable urban guerrilla war, it could only plunge that part of the world into ever greater instability, unquote. George H.W. Bush, 41, written in 1999, obviously, about his thoughts at the end of Gulf War I. British and American coalition forces are using depleted uranium shells in the war against Iraq. There is a United Nations resolution, remember them, which classifies the munitions as illegal weapons of mass destruction. Oh, my God! Depleted uranium contaminates land, causes ill health and cancers among the soldiers using the weapons, the armies they target, and civilians, leading to birth defects in children. The ex-director of the Pentagon's depleted uranium project, Professor Doug Roeke, a one-time U.S. Army colonel who was given the task by the DOD of cleaning the depleted uranium after Gulf War I, said use of DU was, quote, a war crime. That's one fellow's opinion, ladies and gentlemen. Just one fellow. The Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, a pro-war newspaper, says this. The first signs of exasperation among senior coalition officials began to show this week at the growing number of false alarms over finds of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Well, just look in your own arsenal. Wouldn't that... Not a day passes at U.S. Central Command without a flurry of excitement over the discovery somewhere of a cache of powder, bottles of suspicious liquid, or suspected long-range missiles. But this week's crop of WMD alerts turned out once again not to include the smoking gun that coalition politicians need and which coalition generals insist they will definitely find. Suspected cyanide found dumped in the Euphrates is still under investigation. An initial test showed positive results, but a second did not show such a clear reading. Brigadier General Vince Brooks at CENTCOM admitted when questioned about his announcement earlier this week that a facility containing a large number of suspicious bottles had been found in the west of Iraq, we think now it was probably a NBC training school. I don't think they mean the network. I think nuclear, bacteriological, chemical weapons. Not an operational facility. These bottles were samples, and testing is ongoing, he said. Which would bring us, I guess, to our fog watch. It would. There's no music for the fog watch yet, ladies and gentlemen. But you never know. Fog watch named, of course, for the fog of war, and more recently for the Fog News Channel, which dissipates much of the difficulty in visibility. So, apropos of what we were just talking about, U.S. troops early in the week from Reuters, U.S. troops have found thousands of boxes containing vials of unidentified liquid and powder, as well as manuals on chemical warfare at a plant near Baghdad, according to a U.S. officer. It's unclear at this point what the vials contain, and we're sending a team of experts to examine them, he said. I believe the Fog News Channel reported that this was a find of potential weapons of mass destruction. Later in the week, American officials admitted the thousands of boxes of white powder were explosives. Various media outlets had suggested they may have made the first discovery of chemical weapons in Iraq. That was the claim that the Latifia, hey, Queen, not Queen Latifia, just Latifia, period, complex was a suspicious site was made by a U.S. colonel. He also claimed to have discovered nerve agent antidote and Arabic documents relating to chemicals. Must be one of our rare Arabic-speaking colonels. Colonel John Peabody, an engineer brigade commander with the 3rd Infantry Division, had stated troops found those thousands of boxes. He said they discovered atropine used to counter the effects of nerve agents. The facility had been identified by the IAEA, or as President styles it, the IAEA, as a suspected chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons site. UN inspectors visited the plant at least 9 times as recently as February 18th, but the powder turns out to be explosives. So far. But more fog surrounding a reporter for the Fog News Channel, Geraldo Rivera. I said reporter? Did I do that? From a senior CENTCOM official via a memo, internal memo at CNN, regarding Geraldo Rivera. Quote, he was kicked out for violation of operational security. 101st Airborne will bring him out. DOD guidance is very clear on this matter. He was not part of the in-bed program. He was there on his own. He is being pulled. He just doesn't know it yet. He has not gotten the word. The violation of operational security was that he revealed the location of units he was in and their probable vector of march. However, maybe he wasn't kicked out. Later, this report, Fox News Channel executives and the Pentagon reached a deal in which correspondent Geraldo Rivera, who raised the military's ire when he reported operational details, will leave Iraq voluntarily rather than be expelled. Fox and the Pentagon agreed he would leave on his own. U.S. officials told CNN on Monday morning Rivera violated the cardinal rule of war reporting by giving away crucial details of military plans during a Fog News Channel broadcast from Iraq. He told his photographer to aim the camera at the sand in front of him. He then outlined a map of Iraq and showed the relative location of Baghdad and his location with the 101st Airborne. He then showed where the 101st would be going next. He gave away the big picture stuff, a senior military official told CNN. He went down in the sand and drew where the forces are going. Rivera said he had heard nothing about being expelled until he called network headquarters for a scheduled live broadcast. Quote, MSNBC, Rivera used to work at NBC, quote, is so pathetic a cable news network that they have to do anything they can to attract attention, he said. You can rest assured that whatever they're saying is a pack of lies, unquote. Nevertheless, Fox News executives pleaded with Pentagon officials not to expel Rivera. Pentagon officials stood their ground and insisted he go. The deal for the voluntary departure was then arrived at. How was that arrived at? Do we know that? Do we know how the Fox News network goes to the Pentagon and says, don't expel him. We'll let him be voluntarily removed? Rivera accused NBC, as I've said, of spreading lies. He said, all was well between him and the military. I'm further in the country than I ever have been. Over the weekend, Geraldo Rivera filed his first report since leaving Iraq. It was a report that concentrated on the battle in the northern part of Iraq, involving Kurdish troops. He filed the report, although it was hard to exactly pick out this fact. He filed the report from Kuwait, which, if you look at the map, is at the south end of Iraq. So that's some good war reporting, to be at the opposite end of the country from the report. Anyway, the question, ladies and gentlemen, was asked, how does the Fox News Channel reach that agreement with the Pentagon? I don't know. I just don't know. Media mogul Rupert Murdoch said Wednesday Americans have an inferiority complex about the world's opinion and that Iraqis eventually will welcome U.S. troops as liberators. We worry about what people think about us too much in this country. We have an inferiority complex, it seems, Murdoch said at the Milken Institute Global Conference out here in Santa Monica. I think it's out here. I think what's important is that the world respects us. Us, Rupert Murdoch. Us, he's talking about America. Yes, he's a citizen. It cost him, but he's a citizen. The head of News Corp said a long war could heavily influence the U.S. and global economies while creating political instability in the Middle East and elsewhere. Very sage. The perception of America by Iraqis and citizens of other Middle Eastern countries will play a critical role in a global economic recovery, panelists said. The conference was sponsored by the economic think tank, the Milken Institute. Yes. Yes, he paid his penalty. He was a felon, but he paid his penalty, and then he set up an institute. What's your problem? Rupert? Oh, yeah. More about Rupert. The European Commission said this week he can go ahead with his first major television venture in continental Europe, taking over an Italian satellite broadcaster. So he can ensure, I guess, that Geraldo Rivera won't be kicked out of Italy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature.
We're so sorry.
Oh, and we have major countries apologizing this week. The apologies of the week. This will be a little start out in alphabetical order and then deteriorate from there. President Jacques Chirac of France has sent a personal apology to the Queen of England for the desecration of a British war cemetery near Boulogne by anti-war protesters, and attempted to reassure her that the French are on Britain's side in the Iraqi conflict. Downing Street said it unreservedly welcomed Monsieur Chirac's sentiments. He sent the letter to the Queen in French. She reads it fluently. Reflected the anger and shame widely felt in France over the defiling of the cemetery at Etaples, which contains the graves of 11,000 British servicemen, most of whom fell during World War II. World War I. Chirac apologized. New Zealand Prime Minister Helen Clark has apologized to the Bush administration over comments that the U.S. may not have invaded Iraq if Al Gore had been elected president. She said she had given New Zealand's ambassador to Washington directions to give her apology wherever he felt he had to convey it. Clark said, "I can't do more than say, look, I intended no offense, and I apologize for the offense which it obviously has created." Calling a bid to ban tobacco in Rochester, New York, his candles in the park statement, and admitting it was done for shock value only, Rochester Mayor Walter Horman said this week he apologizes for the remarks and announced he will not seek re-election when his term ends in November. Backlash resulting from his controversial proposal was not the reason he decided against pursuing a second term, but it did provide a way to announce his intentions. "The smoking incident was just a vehicle. I thought, you're not running again. So you don't need to be subtle." China apologizes. Let me find that. Well, first of all, Britain. Tony Blair had a junior official in his defense ministry apologize on his behalf for saying that two British soldiers had been executed. Officials were forced to admit this week they had no concrete evidence on how the two Royal Engineers had been killed. They based their judgment on footage shown on Al Jazeera. Adam Ingram, the deputy junior defense minister, regrets any hurt caused to the family. Peter Arnett apologized. He's the other reporter who got into trouble this week. He went on Iraqi TV, said this war is not working. Of course, that was last week's version of events. Then he apologized. NBC fired him. NBC stood by him until the Fox News channel attacked. Then NBC fired him after Arnett apologized. Then Peter Arnett got hired by an English tabloid newspaper, and then he said he didn't apologize. China. I got China here somewhere. China, here it is. China apologized this week for not doing a better job of informing people about severe acute respiratory syndrome as an international medical team went to the city where it believed the mystery illness may have first broken out. The admission, extraordinary for a government that rarely acknowledges fault, came after escalating criticism abroad and one day after the health minister explicitly said China had followed its own rules in dealing with the problem. "Today we apologize to everyone." Okay, that's my favorite apology of the year, right there. Put that... Somebody sew that into a sampler, would you, please? "Today, we apologize to everyone," said Li Liming, director of the Chinese Center for Disease Control. "Our medical departments and our mass media suffered poor coordination. We weren't able to muster our forces in helping provide everyone with scientific publicity and allowing the masses to get hold of this sort of knowledge." That's right. They still say the masses. The masses. Ladies and gentlemen. The British newspaper The Sun, another tabloid, has been forced to make an embarrassing apology after naming and shaming the wrong man as a sex offender. Owing to a mix-up by a photograph agency, the tabloid mistakenly used a photograph of David Gasley in place of a picture of Christopher Harris, who has been banned from going near children for life after groping young girls in Great Yarmouth. Great Yarmouth, everyone. An apology to Mr. Gasley, whose portrait appeared last Saturday in The Sun above the headline, "Face of Kid Ban Pervert," is published this week. "We sincerely apologize to Mr. Gasley for the hurt and embarrassment caused by our report," said the paper. The paper has pioneered the name and shame campaign against convicted sex offenders. No, not that paper. It's, pardon me, the News of the World, another tabloid, which... also. So, ladies and gentlemen, those would be the apologies of the week. There's more news from the rear. Let's get all of it out of the way here before we move along. This from the Arab News, a Saudi Arabian newspaper. I tell you that because I don't know anything more about this story except it's in the Arab News. Two Western journalists have arrived safely back in Kuwait City after being arrested, beaten up, and deprived of food and water in Iraq by members of the U.S. Army's military police. Arab News has learned that Luis Castro and Victor Silva, both reporters for Portuguese television, were held for 4 days, had their equipment, vehicle, and videotapes confiscated, and then were escorted out of Iraq by the 101st, where Geraldo used to be. Despite possessing the proper unilateral journalist accreditation, both journalists were detained. Their ordeal at the hands of the Americans was in stark contrast to that received by Newsday journalists in Baghdad, who yesterday, or this week in Jordan, described as humane their treatment at the hands of their Iraqi interrogators, despite being in cells where they heard people being tortured next door. But, you know, that's next door. We criticized the Iraqi irregulars for using schools as places to hide out. That's not right. That violates the rules of war. Russell Skelton reports for a British newspaper, U.S. Special Forces have taken up strategic positions in three secondary schools located in a densely populated residential area of a city in northern Iraq. The schools, which have been closed since the war began, are located near a prominent Christian church and within 200 meters of a United Nations complex. The decision to locate the special forces in a school in a residential area appears to run counter to U.S. policy. And finally, at the top of the week's news, ladies and gentlemen, UPI reports on the old familiar story, Wait a minute. No, that's not the end, is it? No, we got more stuff. We got more news from the rear. Please. I was running out, and then I didn't run out. From a Norwegian newspaper, a U.S.-based Norwegian weapons inspector. Was that confusing enough? He's a Norwegian weapons inspector, but he lives here. He accuses the United States and Secretary of State Colin Powell of providing the U.N. Security Council with incorrect and misleading information about Iraq's possession of weapons of mass destruction. Jørn Silgerholm said the USA's basis for going to war is thin and called it a slap in the face to the United Nations weapons inspector. He said Colin Powell's report to the Security Council was full of holes. Much of what he said was wrong. It did not match up at all with our information. The entire speech was misleading. Asked if the Americans lied, he said, lie is a strong word, but yes, the information Powell presented about Iraq's nuclear program was simply incorrect. We received much incomplete and poor intelligence information from the Americans, and our cooperation developed accordingly. Much of what has been claimed about WMDs has proven to be sheer nonsense. Britain's Home Secretary says the reason for war agenda of ridding Iraq of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction has slipped down the scale of political importance. He said he hoped no weapons of mass destruction would be found in Iraq. David Blunkett dismissed the need to find them. The chemicals that were dumped in the river, I think it's the River Euphrates, yes, it is. According to the Telegraph of England, it's mustard gas and cyanide that was found there, but they're investigating. Under the watchful gaze of heavily armed troops, water is being taken directly from the river, cleaned, and then piped into buckets. Most residents were pleased, residents of Nasiriyah, are pleased that water is being provided. That's part of the story. Some pointed out that the water problem only arose at the beginning of the war when American aircraft destroyed the city's water treatment plant. That would be, you know what that is about the rest of the story. More news on the Coalition of the Willing, ladies and gentlemen. Bulgaria signed an agreement this week with the United States for deployment to the Gulf region of a 97-member military unit for protection against chemical and biological weapons. Bulgaria and the United States reached this agreement about the status and tasks of the unit, clearing the way for it to leave. The United States will cover all expenses for the maintenance and transport of the unit, said the Bulgarian Defense Ministry. Officials didn't say when the unit was going to leave or where it was going. Well, we'll ask Geraldo. Local media in Bulgaria have reported it to be deployed in Jordan. Here's the lead buried at the end of the story. Thank you, Associated Press. In February, the Bulgarian parliament voted that the unit could join the U.S.-led coalition only if it was deployed in a country neighboring Iraq and not Iraq itself and would not be engaged in combat operations, the coalition of the semi-willing. And Solomon Islands Prime Minister Sir Alan Kimakiza said this week, thanks but no thanks. Oh, we did this already. We did the Solomon Islands. Don't need to repeat that, ladies and gentlemen. Finally, how you get tribesmen on your side. Al-Raqi tribes have been reported crossing sides, now taking the side of the coalition. A British official told the UPI the Iraqi tribes knew instinctively what was going on. The week that the Washington Post reported that $70 million had been spent on the Afghans by the CIA paying the Afghan tribes to turn, they all knew that figure. And several said openly that Iraq was a much more important country and would cost a lot more.
Fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
Ladies and gentlemen, last week we revealed on this broadcast, thanks to the Washington Post, that Pentagon spokeswoman Victoria Clark is, according to a high official at the Pentagon, colorblind. This week, another interesting fact emerged, thanks to the New York Times. Her previous experience, she doesn't have a lot of experience, or any, in the military. Her previous experience before becoming an assistant secretary of defense in charge of flacking at the Pentagon briefings, she represented the cable industry when it infuriated consumers with rising rates and poor service. That's good background for being a Pentagon spokeswoman, representing the cable industry. No, your rates aren't too high. Your income's too low. All right. Collateral damage. Other collateral damage in the war. NBC has reportedly suspended high-definition television transmissions as a result of the attack on Iraq, presumably to use the satellite capacity for more news feeds. So buy that $8,000 thing and then just pray that we don't have a war. See? Poisonous smoke rising from burning oil fields in southern Iraq or from oil-filled ditches and bombing fires in Baghdad has raised suspicions among researchers that the war is aggravating the already fragile environment in Iraq. The United Nations Environmental Program has discovered another effect of the war, increased plankton activity in the estuary of the Shaft al-Arab River, which flows from Iraq into the Gulf. And ornithologists say bird migration routes have been massively disrupted because of the war. Only 5 pairs of European storks have turned up in Sigo, Croatia so far. By the end of March, there are usually hundreds of pairs in the village and more than 1,500 pairs across Croatia. People in the village believe the Iraq war is behind the birds' non-arrival. You could send Geraldo there. Back to the more important damage. President Bush is at the White House. No, sorry, he's at Camp David this weekend preparing, fixing for a meeting with Tony Blair on the increasingly contentious subject of Iraq post-war. Blair has pushed for a much stronger UN role in the post-war process than the president envisions. Colin Powell, likewise. At the UN, senior officials said there's virtually no chance that the Security Council will endorse a Pentagon-run reconstruction effort or a U.S.-installed Iraqi authority. Without new council resolutions, the European Union will not participate in the post-war effort. So now the administration is making noises about maybe working with the UN in some. They'll have some role. I've heard that. I've had some role. I've been in pictures where I've had some role. That's not impressive. And certain officials speculated to the Washington Post this week that the only person who can really convince the president to desist from the route outlined by Don Rumsfeld for a Pentagon-run post-war Iraq is the president's dad. But they say, these officials told the Washington Post, it's not time for that yet. Maybe. Maybe not.
Triumphant eagle. Getting in a little early for the champagne. Hey, 41, I think you mean, isn't it a little early for the Bible study hour where we read the verses about victory?
Yeah, of course, that's what. So look, point is
finally erasing your mistake.
Mm-hmm. Pretty big eraser.
Pretty big pencil.
Thanks.
Took us 12 years and a few thousand lives, each of which we hold absolutely inviolate. Mm-hmm. But the one blot on your presidential heritage is coming to an ignominious end. Don't bother to thank me.
Look, I'm not going to argue that the world's not a better place without Saddam Hussein.
That's a triple negative. Don't follow.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah.
The world is full of bad guys. Sometimes they can be very useful, as in your coalition.
Yeah, see, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to eat away at my moral clarity. Don't go there and do that.
Eritrea.
Now, Eritrea is a very fine part of the
Horn of Africa type group.
No, know where it is.
Yeah.
Not exactly where you'd like to sleep off a college bender in the local holding cell.
Say, no need to live in the past anymore. We're building the future. A few days from now, the new Iraq will be taking shape, and all the static from the armchair generals is going to... Hey, aren't all generals in armchairs?
Yeah, think so. Look, 43 have always really respected your right to take counsel from advisors of your own choosing.
Well, speaking as the man who was chosen by almost half the public to lead this country, I appreciate that.
But it's the future and the new Iraq and such that we got to talk about, if you'd like.
Yeah, look, I've had this conversation with Colin.
Colin is a good man.
I'm going to fly to northern blessed Ireland, for goodness sake, to have this very conversation with the Blair Bear. Yeah. You know, the new Iraq is not going to be turned over to the UN for any more of their irrelevant meddling. The UN can come in and count the silverware in the food for oil program if that floats their boat. Otherwise...
See, he didn't want to get into all this. Well, there's a 50-year history of international relationships built up under both parties, kind of important to a whole bunch of very serious people.
Well, people I talk to are very serious, too. And you see, 41, I've been reaching out.
Yeah.
I've not only talked to these people, I've been reading their books. So
look, 43, boil it down for you here. You can catch more flies with multilateral arrangements than you can with not.
What do I want with more flies? Hey, 41, you know, the UN is like microwave waffles. It was a good idea, but it just didn't work out. We got to move on.
To what? Laser waffles?
Not bad. See, when I argue this with Colin or Condi, they just lose their sense of humor.
Yeah, wasn't totally kidding there.
Yeah. Still, look, we bought Iraq with our blood and our sacrifice.
Of blood?
Right.
And, of course, with about $75 billion worth
of... Well, that's lowballing, of course. But anyway, we bought it. We own it. Why would we turn its salvation and its transformation over to a cheese-eating debating society?
No reason we do that.
All right, then.
But don't your intelligence briefings tell you that we're lighting matches in the most explosive kindling in the world, Arab public opinion?
Well, they're not using that kind of colorful verbiage, but yeah.
And don't they suggest that a small American footprint in the new Iraq is the only way we have left to...
The only water we can pour on that kindling?
Sure. Fine.
Hey, you know, 41, and don't take this personal, but I call it the CYA. I mean, they tell me whatever allows them to, you know, cover their own poop shoots.
For the Catholic Youth Association?
Now you are kidding.
Now I am.
Yeah.
To mask the hurt. I'm serious. I'm serious enough to use the first-person pronoun, singular.
Hey, 41, you know, this isn't a fight.
Yeah.
I'm standing on your shoulders. I'm building the new world order you talked about, only it's got a simpler management chart.
Just worried that you're only listening to the choir.
Oh, as if sitting in meetings with Don Rumsfeld is a day at the races. You know what he calls me in classified meetings?
Mm.
He calls me Marge Schott.
The woman who used to own a baseball team?
Cincinnati Reds. Originally the Red Stockings, then of course they became the Red Legs during the McCarthy thing.
Look, you are getting Reagan-esque. He used to fend me off with trivia about life on the Warner's lot.
Hey, 41. What good is it to be the most powerful nation on Earth if we can't act like it?
Don't know, but think we're going to find out. Give my love to Laura.
Yeah, I will. Call anytime. Really. Bye-bye.
I'll say hello to Mom.
My mama was the cold north wind. My daddy was the son of a railroad man from west of hell, where the trains don't even run. Never heard the wind.
whistle of a southbound freight or the singing of its driving wheel. No, I never did no wandering, never did no wandering, never did no wandering after all. They say the highway's just one big road, and it goes from here to there. And they say you carry a heavy load when you're rolling down the line somewhere. Never seen the dance of the telephone poles as they go whizzing by. No, I never did no wandering, never did no wandering, never did no wandering after all. Never did no wandering high, never did no wandering low. Now a sailor's life is a life for him, but it never was for me. And I've never soared where the hawk may soar, or see what the hawk might see. Never hiked to heaven on a mountain trail, never rode on a river's range. No, I never did no wandering, never did no wandering, never did no wandering after all. Never did no wandering, and never did no wandering, never did no wandering after all. Never did no wandering after all.
Here's a quote for you, ladies and gentlemen. To the people of the Baghdad Wilayat, in the name of the king and in the name of the peoples over whom he rules, our military operations have as their objective the defeat of the enemy, but our armies have not come into your cities and lands as conquerors or as enemies, but as liberators. Your sons have been carried off to wars not of your seeking. Your wealth has been stripped from you by unjust men and squandered in distant places. It is the wish of the great nations that you should prosper, even as in the past, when your lands were fertile, when your ancestors gave to the world literature, science, and art, and Baghdad was one of the wonders of the world. The Germans and Turks have for 20 years made Baghdad a center of power from which to assail the power of the British and the Allies. Therefore, the British government cannot remain indifferent as to what takes place in your country, now or in the future. For, in duty to the interests of the British people and their allies, the British government cannot risk that being done in Baghdad again, which has been done by the Turks and Germans during the war. Therefore, I am commanded to invite you, through your elders and representatives, to participate in the management of your civil affairs in collaboration with the political representatives of Great Britain, who accompany the British Army, so that you may unite with your kinsmen in the North, East, South, and West in realizing the aspirations of your race. March 19, 1917, Lieutenant General Sir Stanley Maude, the proclamation he issued as he entered Baghdad after the defeat of the Ottomans. Well, where are we supposed to put our feet now? The quote of the war. Well, there may be many quotes of the war. It depends on where you hang your hat. I think the litmus test of this week is you can tell anything, everything about a person's position on the war and almost everything else by whether they think, whether they're more disgusted by Peter Arnett or Geraldo Rivera. That's a litmus test that's unfailing. So there are plenty of candidates for pride-inducing quotes of the war. Probably PFC Lynch will be the winner there. But for less pride-inducing quotes, except, you know, it's good to know that the Army has not succumbed yet to political correctness. From the New York Times, Sergeant Eric Schrumpf, who characterized his foes as ill-trained and cowardly. This was in the early days of the war. "We had a great day," Sergeant Schrumpf said. "We killed a lot of people." They declined several times to shoot at Iraqi soldiers out of fear they might hit civilians. But in the heat of a firefight, both men, Sergeant Schrumpf and his corporal conceded, when the calculus often warps, a shot not taken in one set of circumstances may suddenly present itself as a necessity. "We dropped a few civilians," Sergeant Schrumpf said, "but what do you do?" "There was one Iraqi soldier and 25 women and children," he said earlier in the week. "I didn't take the shot. But more than once, he found a different choice, one Iraqi soldier standing among two or three civilians." He recalled one such incident in which he and other men in his unit opened fire. He recalled watching one of the women standing near the Iraqi soldier fall. "I'm sorry," the sergeant said, "but the chick was in the way." Finally, because I'm sure you missed this, Texas prosecutors this week agreed to throw out the convictions of 38 people, nearly all of them black, who faced drug charges based on the uncorroborated testimony of a white former undercover police officer. In a stunning reversal, the state agreed with defense lawyers that the former officer Thomas Coleman was an unreliable witness, even though his testimony was the only witness evidence used to convict the defendants, some of whom are serving sentences of 90 years or more. Asked if the convictions represented a travesty of justice, the state special prosecutor hesitated a moment and then said, "Yes." This is your brain on prosecutors. Oh, speaking of which, the officer Thomas Coleman, had run up a string of debts after quitting earlier jobs in law enforcement. He conceded he once owned an illegal machine gun, and he was described by previous employers as dishonest, unreliable, a racist, and a gun nut. When one of the defense lawyers asked him if he was sure all the defendants behind bars deserved to be there, Coleman replied, "I'm pretty sure." He also admitted to several mess-ups, including false police reports, that resulted in four other cases being dismissed. Coleman could not be reached for comment. For his work on the drug bust, which was recorded by television cameras, he was named Texas Lawman of the Year in 1999. Mr. Coleman, we'd like that plaque back, if you don't mind. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations. Yeah, I'm dreaming about that. On NPR Worldwide throughout Europe, if we're not preempted, where we were for at least a couple weeks there. On the USN 440 cable system in Japan, where we're never preempted. Around the world through the American Forces Network, who knows? Up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant signal of WBCQ the planet, 7.415 megahertz, across North America on Sirius satellite radio, and on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations where it's never preempted, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it would be just like helping to set up the new Iraq if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, huh? The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Thank him, or blame him. Well, you know, if Don Rumsfeld can say the plan is Tommy Franks, I can say that. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Springtime for the homeless. And as they say in China, for the masses.